welcome back into another wonderful episode of Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. Today, our show is taking us downtown to the historic Glee Theater, and we are joined by several artists that are a part of the upcoming Rogue Theater Festival, happening June 3rd through the 9th at the Glee Theater, as I mentioned, and you can get your ticket to more information by visiting roguetheaterfestival.com. Today, joining us, we have the director and producer, Tori Bagaki, and the playwright, producer, and performer, Mackenzie Robin Crystal, who are joining us with their show, The Goblin Woman. We have Ariana Wilmoni, the playwright, producer, and performer, and Bradley Valenzuela, the director of the show, He's Different. And we have Emma Hawkins, the producer and performer, and Shane Lowry, the director of the show, Clocks Are Like Angels. We are so excited to have this amazing group of artists joining us to talk about a festival that's new to us. So without further ado, let us go ahead and welcome on our guests. Everybody, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you so much for having us.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you all for taking the time to be here. Tori, Mackenzie, welcome back. It's so good to have you. I'm excited to dive into this festival. As I mentioned, this is a new festival to us, and we've got three great works that you're all bringing to us today to talk about. So why don't I go ahead and start up with Mackenzie? You're the playwright of the show, The Goblin Woman. Can you remind us a little bit about what your show is about?
Yes, thank you so much for having us back again. We're super excited to get to talk some more. So The Goblin Woman is an experimental movement play. It's a compilation of scenes, vignettes, poetry, and devised movement pieces that we are collaborating on together as a collective. And it's ultimately a battle of dichotomies. I call The Goblin Woman a very distant echo of the poem The Goblin Market by Christina Rossetti. So it's certainly not an adaptation, but it takes a lot of inspiration from the imagery of the poem and the sense of being at war with oneself. So the story follows Lizzie and Laura, who are two sisters, but more representative of two halves of a whole, as well as Jeannie, who is a long lost, almost lover of Lizzie's. And we see Lizzie on one hand fighting an immense repression and denial and fear of the self. And on the other hand, we see Laura on the opposite end of the pendulum, so to speak, really striving for a wildness and a freedom. And the two of them together represent the juxtaposition that I think many of us face within ourselves of struggling against the should-be's that society imposes on us versus the who we are internally. And so ultimately, it's an exploration of queerness and gender and identity and desire. And it's a production that seeks to bring catharsis and a sense of liberation or a step towards liberation for everyone who comes in contact with it.
That is fabulous. Love that. Ariana, let's jump to you with your show that you're the playwright of, He's Different. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. So He's Different is about Liv, who is a 20-something, okay, late 20s woman who is always very skeptical of men, you know, and she's very critical of the men that her friends date and how, you know, men are trash and stuff like that. And everything changes when she meets Travis, a guy that seems to have, you know, a lot of potential. And it's just, It's a comedy, and it's about dating and modern dating and dating through social media. And it's just a fun way of putting things in perspective when, you know, you start to liken to somebody when you've already always like criticized the people that your friend like and stuff like that. Yeah.
It's also fantastic. Emma Hawkins, as the producer and one of the performers in the show, Clocks Are Like Angels, can you tell us a little bit about this production?
Yeah, absolutely. So this show is written by Kyle R. Thomas, and it takes place in a small town in East Tennessee called Lewiston in 1933, whenever FDR started rolling out the New Deal and all of the alphabet agencies and all kinds of things like that. And whenever the Tennessee Valley Authority started dam construction and buying up all of the land that would be flooded because of the dam. And so the story follows one of those families that is tasked with the difficult decision of what do you do whenever your land is one of these pieces of land that is going to end up being underwater. There is a lot of loss involved and a lot of difficult decisions that a young couple has to make.
Stanley, wonderful. Well, let's dive a little bit more into these very different and intricate pieces. And I want to start with Bradley Valenzuela. Bradley, you are the director of the show He's Different. So can you tell us a bit about what it's been like developing this piece for the Rogue Theater Festival?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great. I worked with Ariana before in a previous piece she wrote. And something that's so delightful about it is that it has these moments of fantasy, like the way we build fantasies in our own love, in our own lives, as well as grappling with the reality of being a person in their 20s, navigating love, life, and all the complications throughout. So it's been really fun to create magic in a given space like that, while also allowing it to be grounded with the actors. That's been one of the more delightful parts of the project. And finding moments to make us giggle. All I want is to giggle as often as I can. It's a comedy, you know?
I love that. Not just laugh, but giggle. That's fantastic. Shane, how about you? You're the director of Clocks Are Like Angels. Can you tell us a bit about what it's been like developing your piece?
Well, as a 44-year-old man, it's probably the hardest thing that I have ever worked on. And so I guess you'd like to say it's fun to have a challenge, but the older you get, you really want things to just get easier. But this has, because Kyle's writing is, it's natural, it's realistic. And, you know, typically in theater, we have our main beats and objective, and that's what you focus on as a director. Kyle's writing has the opportunity, if you just focus on those beats, you're going to have two people standing around just talking for 2 hours. It's all the sub beats that exist within that, like going, hey, someone's talking about buying your land, but you still have to get ready this package of a person that just died in the community. So which objective matters more? How can those two things exist together and in this tiny location? And how do you blend that all in to tell a story that constantly has twists and turns that you do not see coming? So the challenge of it has been exhaustingly fun. Also, another fun thing is that this is, so it's the TVA that flooded the town of Lewiston back with FDR. I work for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in water management and do the water quality and the stream gauging for all the dams that are on the Cumberland River in Tennessee. And so a lot of those dams did the same thing. And so it's made me think that it's like, I get paid today and people were displaced a long time ago. And as I was thinking about it today, it's like, you will never see a play about a rich person being displaced because of a dam, because it just didn't happen. And so it's been interesting to reflect on it from the theater side, from my personal side. And what's awesome about this play and hearing the other ones with Rogue Theater Festival and reading online what's there is that, you know, theater has this wonderful opportunity to take something broad that we can't understand, like the infrastructure of dams, and remind us that there is always a personal level and that it's going to affect individuals. And so Kyle just did it. He did a beautiful job taking a large thing and narrowing it down to one family and how it affected them. And I think it's going to give people a lot to think about because, I mean, where are we now today? We're talking all the time about the infrastructure that's needed in our country. I mean, frankly, our dams, most of them, Emma's tapping me like our dams were built with a 50 lifespan. They were all older than 50 years old. We got a lot of infrastructure in this country that needs done, but we can do another podcast on that.
I love that. That's fascinating. Tori, I want to come to you. Now, I know we've talked about you and Mackenzie's show recently when we spoke about the Queerly Festival happening. But let me ask again, you've got these two productions of this piece happening. What has it been like developing this piece, particularly for the Rogue Theatre Festival?
Oh, see, I love that question. As I spoke about in the last episode where we got to chit chat a little bit about this piece as pertinent to the Queerly Festival, which we're also in this summer, it's been a very abstracted piece by nature of the fact that Mackenzie's writing is non-linear. It's focused on the emotionality of a queer experience. It's about seeking catharsis. It's kind of, this script that shifts between choreographic movement and vignettes and non-narrative storytelling, and it's very much the felt sense of things. So it's been a very collaborative environment in rehearsals where a lot of it is workshop based, a lot of it is just team led, where I kind of see myself as, per what I was sharing in our last experience together, a guide more so than a director in the traditional sense. I feel as though I work with the team in terms of, okay, what are your thoughts on this? Because it is so non-traditional, it's one of the most difficult and rewarding projects I've gotten to work on. There's no given as to say, oh, this feels like a traditional back and forth where we're sitting at a table with a cup of coffee. It's a scattering of words on a page, quite literally in some cases. And it's a matter of, okay, what does it mean to have a page with words plopped all over it, like a collage piece, and to turn that into a piece of theater? I don't always know. And I think to be able to work with everyone, A, informs the ensemble nature of what we're trying to get at with the show, which is, for everyone seeking home, there is community, both within and without a queer space. It's when we're trying to find freedom within the self, there's always the reminder that that freedom exists within a community who is waiting with open arms for you. And I feel like we're fostering that quite literally in our rehearsal process and in the room, and that deep listening to each other. But to speak specifically to working for Rogue, what I love about the space we're in is the architecture. And something that I've gotten really excited about is the fact that we have this beautiful, extension of stage that goes to the right-hand side of our audience. We have these columns that we're able to use. We have this kind of upstage cross behind the columns that you can see. And something that always interests me as a theater maker is, how can we kind of subvert the expectations of the space and play non-traditionally with what it is to use the stage that you are given and not just create a piece of theater to plop into a space, but rather adapt and choreograph around the textures of the unique theater that you're in. And as we're kind of doing the festival circuit this summer, we're playing with that. And when I first got to tour the space, I remember being so excited because I realized, as per these goblins, which are these, and we'll probably discuss a bit more, but the goblins themselves, as per the idea, it's a distant echo of Christina Rossetti's work, are not so much literal creepy characters. They are the fully embodied. They are people who own their sexuality, especially femme people who own their sexuality in a space where it's so often constricted and imposed upon. So, what is it to play with that architecture in a way that reflects that freedom? What is it to climb up these columns? What is it to peek around? What is it to run down that kind of side bridge into the audience? What is it to sit in places it's not expected, And building that in our rehearsals has been so exciting to me. It allows for, in addition to with that kind of behind the column upstage space that's still visible to the audience, the creation of a dream space that the goblins are often using, where they're almost becoming like a Greek choral texture in the background of a lot of scenes. And I've been having a ton of fun with that.
I love that. That sounds like so much fun. Well, I want to ask our playwrights now, with the pieces that you've written, what is the message or thought you hope audiences take away from your piece? And Ariane, I'm going to start with you first on that.
Definitely two things. First of all, that it's okay to want to be independent and, your own individual self, but it's also okay to want to be loved, which is definitely a message that I've gotten from watching the 2019 version of Little Women, which was like a big inspiration of mine when I was writing this. Because I've always been very independent, but I also like to remind myself that it's okay to want to be loved. Doesn't make you any less, independent of a person. And then the other thing is that I just want people to appreciate platonic friendships and non-romantic love, because when, whenever our love life is letting us down whenever the guy that we like runs off with someone else. Like, your friends are there for you to cheer you up, to watch your favorite film, to get you your favorite food. And, you know, that platonic love is special. And I just want people to focus on that rather than finding the perfect partner or whatever.
That's a lovely idea. I love it. What a great inspiration as well, by the way. That's a fantastic version of that story. Mackenzie, how about you? What is the message or thought you hope people take away from this piece, The Goblin Woman?
You know, this piece was really born of my own personal exploration of my gender and my queerness, and also the intersection of being neurodiverse and queer and genderqueer, and the sort of particular journey that's taken me on and that I'm still on, and that this production is still really helping me navigate. But I hope that anyone who sees this show, anyone really who comes in contact with this show at all, is able to walk away emboldened to release their true self, the inner self that's sort of been pushed away and locked away, and that even amidst the fear of finding that release, that catharsis, that people are able to walk away from this show feeling emboldened to release that inner self with love and with courage and with the sense that there are people around them who will always love them and see them as they are.
I love that. That is a brilliant, brilliant thought. Shane, I'm going to come to you for that question. As the director of Clocks Like Angels, what's the message or thought you're hoping audiences take away from your piece?
Well, I think the overall one would be that it's like, let's not forget that whenever there's something big going on in our country, that there's smaller stories, there are individuals, there are families that are affected, whether it's the, you know, if a new road is built, if a wider road is built, whose land are they taking? If a war is done, you know, who is dying? You know, what kids left at home without a parent? Things like that. Just to always remember there is a family that is affected by it. But also to know that there are people's jobs, who it is their job, their livelihood, to go do these things. And that's kind of the broad perspective. I think on the smaller thing, I hope people enjoy. And I when I read it, there's a point in the show I stood up and that I read the script. I walked away because I could not believe what just happened. And I don't want to spoil anything, but I walked out the room and I was like, I'm not reading the rest of this. And I came back about 30 minutes later and finished. So the twist, I hope people just enjoy the twist. And I know Kyle wants people to enjoy the emotional ride through it. And then on, you know, from, I'll let Emma say her perspective as an actress in this, because the female characters in this are extraordinarily strong and powerful in a time period where, you know, in the 30s, where you don't have much opportunities for strength or power.
Yeah, so the show takes place in the 30s. Women in the 30s, especially in a town that has no electricity, didn't really have much power. And the role that I play Laura in the show, she goes through a journey of gaining her power and taking ownership of her own journey and kind of what she needs to do to not only protect her family, but to protect herself and to gain her own kind of story throughout all of these terrible, awful things that kind of life has dealt her. And she takes it and she doesn't let it beat her down. She lets it make her stronger. And she really becomes a remarkable, she starts off remarkable, but she becomes a even more remarkable woman throughout the process.
That is wonderful. Wonderful. I am loving all of this information about your shows, especially the ideas that we as audience members will get the chance to take away. And it leads to my final question for this first part, which is, who do you hope have access to your piece? And Tori, why don't we start with you and the Goblin Woman?
Yeah, I think, you know, this piece is so unique, and I've kind of wrestled with the question of who is our intended audience, but I think what it comes back down to is it's a show that I think anyone can walk away with having felt some feeling of a deep breath, a catharsis, and a release. The part of myself that is functioning as a director and producer on this piece and as someone who is challenging my own vulnerability and working on it, because it is in some ways such an emotionally rich piece as per my own journeys with queerness and identity. You know, I think back to my younger self who is entering into the theater world unsure of how theater and my own sense of self would intersect, and feeling as though, very ironically, as I was performing, I was also performing and masking as a version of myself that was not true. And as I'm still uncovering the truth of who I am, especially within a queer space, you know, I want this show to reach people who are on that journey, as if to reach out an arm and say, we are with you, we see you, you are not alone. And that the journeys and the fighting within yourself to find a balance, a deep breath, and a sense of I do belong, I have a community that loves me, and I deserve to let the mask down. You know, I hope that we reach the people who are in need of that message. And even beyond just a queer space, I hope this show reaches people, regardless of identity and sexuality, that are in need of some sense of belonging and feeling as though they can let down the fetters, release the chain of feeling as though they are tied to what is imposed upon them in any capacity. Because in the society that we're in right now, I feel like there's so much expectation in so many different categories, right? Where you have to perform this. You identify as this, that means X, Y, Z, right? And I think we're kind of offering with this show the release of that. So I really hope that those who feel more generally as if they're constricted by imposed ideas of X, Y, Z is who you are, can start to question and get curious about and feel within themselves a presentation of the true self by watching it on stage.
That's a beautiful answer. Bradley, how about you? Who do you hope have access to your piece, He's Different?
I hope that people younger or older can look at it and see the reality and like the comedy in being like in your 20s and seeing everything as a crisis and seeing everything as something that was just like so high expectation, but is in front facing so silly, and just like within that silliness, navigating that you don't have to be a perfect person to be worthy of love in different ways, that you can have these flaws and elements of you. You can not be the perfect feminist. You cannot be the perfect activist. You could not pay attention to things all the time, but still have so much love and joy and growth available in your heart. I think what I want people to see is the beauty and potential of being a person, of loving people and letting people love you back. That's the kind of audiences I hope we get.
That's also a beautiful answer. I love that. That pairs perfectly with your idea of giggling. That's perfect. Emma, bring us home with this first part. Who do you hope have access to Clocks Are Like Angel?
We hope that Clocks Are Like Angels provides everybody with the opportunity to like make connections. Like Shane said about taking broad things and making it personal, like with things that are happening in the country, in the world, kind of bringing it home. I am a high school teacher and I taught this play to my students this semester, and they said things like, I never thought about these things actually affecting people and things like that. So I think that is one of the major things that we are hoping happens with the show, is that people take things and really personalize them and realize the impact that broader things can have. Additionally, people realizing their own inner strength. Laura goes through a lot of loss of children, of family members, and of neighbors, and she doesn't let it beat her down. I know I said that earlier, but it is such a impactful part of the show for me personally, that people discovering that awful things will happen to you, yes, but you don't have to let them beat you down for forever. They will for a little bit, but then you grow from that and build strength to make you a stronger version of yourself.
Please listen carefully.
second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And with such a large group, I want to just skip right ahead to my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is, what is your favorite theater memory? Yes, Shane, I saw you. Go ahead, Shane.
Yeah, because they again 44 years old, so if they stick in my mind this long, then I don't know if it's my favorite or most traumatic, but it's the one that stays there. And I like whenever I get opportunities to teach kids, I always like to share this story. I was in kindergarten, and it was the little Christmas pageant that you do. And, you know, mom makes costumes for everybody, you know, everybody's moms make the costumes for the kid. I got to play an elf. I don't remember what I sang or whatever, but I knew I walked on stage and I sang something. But my costume, and my mom, she could sew. There are very few people who can sew these days, but my mom was wonderful. She could make great costumes and things like that. And she made me a great elf costume that was covered in jingle bells, absolutely covered. So everybody else is walking out. The moment that I walk out, jingling all the way, the entire audience laughs. And I get my poor little six-year-old self up there, face in front, and I start bawling. And that is my first theater memory that I have. And I'll let that tie in to the second one, because it's a close. And you choose which one you want. But the second one was like during the first Desert Storm. And so I think I was like fifth or sixth grade. And so we did a pageant to like film and send to the soldiers over in Iraq. And if your parents were in the military and you didn't get their uniform, you got to stand behind the flag holding it up and all that. And that's when I learned if you're wearing an entire wool Air Force uniform, which my father was in the Air Force, and it's 100 degrees and you lock your knees, you're going to start to pass out. So all I remember about that was getting really dizzy. And afterwards, everybody asking me, are you okay? Are you okay? Because I think I passed out a little bit. So the fact that 44 or 40 some odd years later, I'm still doing theater, I think is neat.
I love those. Those are fantastic. Thank you for them. Yes, Tori.
The memory that comes back to mind when I think about this question immediately is one that's very near and dear to my heart, but actually when I was in the performance space, and I still do perform a bit, but I've kind of shifted into more directing, producing, but it was at the end of high school, and we were doing at our small town high school in upstate New York, we were doing a production of A Chorus Line, which was a terrible choice in hindsight, but at the time we were all having a blast. I was Sheila. Why we had a 17-year-old doing that, I don't know. Don't ask me. But all of that aside, we were doing the kick line at the end, and we had our little gold costumes and our sparkly little hats. And I look out into the crowd, and I see just everyone is like standing up and cheering and screaming. And my friends are there, my girlfriends, and they're like, yes! Like feral raccoons in the back row, truly. And I'm looking over at my friends, and we're like, okay, lights are going to go down. We're just going to stop doing this kick line. No. And we see our director up in the box, and she's like, go away. They love it. And we're like, okay. So we just keep kicking. And I swear to God, we did this kick line for like 4 minutes, and the audience is kind of looking at us like, do we stop clapping? Do they keep going? Do we? But the thing I love about that, and eventually they took lights down and we left, and we all were like, but the thing that cracks me up about that memory, and is actually very sweet, is the fact that I remember looking at people's faces and seeing just how excited and happy they were and how they were just eating it up, you know? And I think we were too. And there was this kind of sense in me of, isn't it wonderful to be able, as silly as it is to be doing a 17-year-old chorus line, good Lord, we're bringing this level of joy and laughter to people and for them to want to keep clapping, at least for the first 3 out of 4 minutes. And it kind of clicked in my brain at that point. I was like, this is something I want to be able to offer, where I can get an audience this invested in a piece of work. And for us, likewise, to feel this invested in keeping going and keeping kicking our legs. And it's kind of been a little memory of return to when I need a boost of energy about doing this work, you know, is that sensation and being able to look out in the crowd and kind of be like, we're really doing something here. People are screaming from the back row, you know, it just felt really good.
A wonderful memory. Thank you for that. Bradley, I think I saw your hand. Yes. What is your favorite theater memory?
Yeah, the one that first jumped to my head was I moved here like 4.5 years ago, but I visited two more times before that. And the best production I think I've ever seen was Once on This Island, directed by Michael Arden in The Round, Circle and Square. And there was a moment, the whole show was like stunning. I was like, I love fantastical realism. Like I love magic. Like as a director, I'm always like, can I make magic? I have like a charm tattoo. I'm just like a big into witches and stuff. But so I was very into the show. But the moment that struck me to my core, if you don't know the show, she's chasing this guy who she thinks she's in love with. And she makes a deal with the gods that he can live. If she convinces him to love her back, then they'll both live. And if not, she'll die. And he ends up being engaged to someone else after like they spend this whole weekend together, this whole time together in love. And the god of death, Papa Gay, is like, I'll let you live if you kill him. Here's a knife. If you kill him, this is it. And there was just this moment of like musical motifs were swirling around me. The staging was shifting around you. You felt like this helplessness, like she was thrust into a tornado of gods trying to impose something on her. They wanted her to give up on love. They wanted her to quit. And then at the end, it's this actress, Hayley Kilgore, who's just stunning, who 19 years old, plucked from like a random audition for it. And she just threw her knife on the ground and was like, no, I will love him knowing it kills me because I am stronger than the things that people put on me. And I just remember being like stunned by it and thinking to myself, like, that's the kind of story I want to tell of a girl. I love female driven stories. And I want to tell a story of a female character, a feminine character who was faced with the world thrusting circumstances at them, basically implying that they have to do it and not doing it anyway. And going, actually, go fuck yourself. I'm not going to. You can't make me. And there was a boldness in letting love win in that way that just, I remember as a director, I went, if I can ever create something that gives this kind of feeling, then I could retire the next day. And that's been driving me ever since.
I love that memory. Thank you so much for that. Who would like to go next? Ariana, yes. What is your favorite theater memory?
Favorite theater memory is pretty recent, actually. I went to see a show about 2 months ago. I'm on this like website where that offers like free tickets for shows. And I just occasionally, if I have a free evening, I just pick a random show that seems interesting. And I picked this random show. It was called When Your Soulmate Dies. And I didn't read anything about it because I was like, it's free, whatever. I just went there. And it was this one-man show in this like big room. And first off, I was like, oh, it's a one-man show. You know, like, oh, it has to be. Hopefully it's good. And it was about 1 hour and 20 minutes long. And I think it was one of my favorite things I've ever seen in my life. And for 1 hour and 20 minutes, I was so into the story about this man. It was a true story that the actor was telling about how him and his wife, you know, were soulmates. And unfortunately, she had passed away and all that. And it gave me more that like bare stage with the one person telling their story than like any crazy, crazy, super multi-million dollar production with no core at the, you know, no core, no story or no feeling behind it. But it just gave me so much. And I remember after the performance, I just had to go up to him and say thank you. And I truly can't remember the last time that I was affected by something so beautifully written, both as a person and as a performer and as a playwright. And I keep that memory. I will keep it forever because it was truly beautiful and it didn't have to be anything extravagant. It just had to be one person telling a story. And yeah, I was really happy about it.
I love that. That's such a beautiful memory. Thank you for that. Yes, Mackenzie, please. Yes.
You know, I have a hard time pinpointing one specific memory or moment, either that I've seen or participated in, but a particular series of moments comes to mind when I think of my favorite theater memory. It's the moments that I've had alone in the theater, like alone late at night in the quiet dark, nothing but the ghost light casting a dim white glow in the corner, and laying on the ground in the middle of the stage and breathing in the ghosts and all of the stories that have passed through. There's nothing more tranquil that I've ever experienced than those moments. And sometimes it's just being there and being present in the quiet. And occasionally, if I've had the opportunity to be in a space like that by myself and I'm struggling with any particular emotion, like I can remember one time in this little ramshackle theater at Hofstra University, is the college Tori and I both went to, by myself late on some random night in the Spiegel Theater. This little ramshackle hut falling apart, laying on stage in the dark by myself and contending with the tumultuousness of the time. And I had recently been working on a piece from Hamlet, and just laying there on the ground by myself and breathing out. And now I am alone, and speaking the rogue and peasant slave soliloquy out into the dark, just barely on my breath by myself, as though it was being pulled out for an audience of spirits who were lingering there with me. Don't get as many opportunities as that now that we've graduated and don't have as easy access to theater spaces, but they are definitely moments that I treasure.
That is so lovely. So thank you for that memory. That really was lovely and beautiful. Emily, bring us home. What is your favorite theater memory?
My favorite theater memory is more akin to Shane and Tori's, of a time that something went amiss. I was 17. Murfreesboro Little Theater does outdoor Shakespeare here in Murfreesboro. And we were doing a production of The Twelfth Night. It was pirate themed. Shane actually directed it and built the set, which will come into play in a minute. And I was random extra number two or something like that. And there was a small child in the cast that was scared to walk the plank onto the pirate ship that Shane had built. So at the very beginning of the show, I would carry this child with me across the plank to get onto the ship so that she could get there. Orsino also had a small costume change at the beginning where I would put his pirate coat on him and hand him his sword. So in one arm, I had a child, and the other arm, I had a sword that was sheathed and a pirate coat. I am in a long pirate dress. I think we can all probably see where this is going, but I am walking and I step on the front of the dress and it pulls me off the edge of the platform with the child because Shane did not build a railing. And I move the child out of the way so the child does not hit the ground, and I catch myself face first on a tree. First entrance of the show. Before, if the music be the food of love, play on, has even been said, I am on the ground behind a platform. So everybody was okay. Child was fine. Passed the child off. I have a scar on my nose from that fall, but everything was fine. I got up, put the jacket on Orsino, gave him his sword, blood running down my nose, and then walked off stage. So that is my theater memory.
It was non-equity. Railings were not required.
Wow. Wow. What a memory. Oh, my gosh. Oh, thank you all so much for those incredible memories. Those truly were wonderful. As we wrap things up, I would love to know if our listeners would like more information about any of your works, or they'd like to reach out to you. How can they do so? So, Tori and Mackenzie, let's come to you first and the Goblin Woman.
We can both go. You're looking at me like, who's going to speak first? Who's going to go? The Goblin Woman, you can find information about us, our show, our process, and cool behind the scenes type of things, rehearsal footage, photos, some fun information about the play itself on socials at The Goblin Woman. Also, Mackenzie, myself, and our good friend Jack Goodman are starting a theater company, and this is the launch of that company at Reverie, R-E-V-E-R-I-E, Arts Collective on Instagram. Soon probably also to be on Facebook, and we're working on a website. My personal Instagram information and website is just my name, Tori, T-O-R-I, last name Bogacki, B-O-G-A-C-K-I, either at www.toribogacki.com or just on Instagram. And then our show goes up in the Rogue Theater June 9th at 4 o'clock. And then Mac, I'll pass it off to you.
Hello. Yes, if you check out our Instagram at The Goblin Woman, follow us at Reverie Arts Collective. We're incredibly excited for all of the future collaborations that are coming. The Goblin Woman will be premiering in the Siggy Theater at the Flea on June 9th at 4 p.m. And if you can't catch us then, you can also catch us at Under St. Mark's as part of the Queerly Festival. We will be there on June 13th and June 22nd. Through our Instagram, you can find our link tree with more information. You can also check out my personal Instagram is macrobin.k or my website, mackenzierobincrestle.com. Thank you so much for having us on here again and for giving us the time. We're so incredibly excited to be launching this collective, and sharing this process has been very surreal and exciting.
Thank you. That's wonderful. I love it. Let's go to He's Different and Ariana and Bradley.
Yes. So He's Different will premiere at, obviously, at The Rogue on June 6th at 7:30 p.m. You can find us at the play's Instagram, which is at He's Different Play. And my personal Instagram is Ariana Wellmoney, and my website is arianawellmoney.com. And thank you.
Yes, please check us out on He's Different Play on Insta. I just put it on the chat. You can also find my personal Instagram at Bradley GV. That's B-R-A-D-L-Y. Because my mom felt like being unique, and check out other projects. I recently got into the New York Theater Festival for a show I wrote myself. So feel free to follow, check out other projects. Other than that, our play is June 6th at, what was the time, Ariana?
7:30 p.m.
7:30 p.m. I knew I was going to be there all day, but 7:30 p.m. is when everyone else will be there.
Fabulous. And bringing us home, we've got Clocks Are Like Angels, Emma and Shane.
Yes, we will be at the Flea Theater on June 8th at 7:30 p.m. You can find more from us and hopefully more from Kyle Thomas in the future on Murfreesboro Little Theater's website, which is mltarts.com. And we are on Instagram at Murfreesboro_little_theater. And on Twitter at Burroughs Lil Theater.
And if any of your listeners are looking to come down to Nashville and you want to know where the best pedal taverns are or any of the crazy crap that happens in Nashville, we can help you decipher through that as well.
Well, wonderful. Well, Tori, Mackenzie, Ariana, Bradley, Emma, Shane, thank you all so, so much for taking the time to join us today, for introducing us to the Rogue Theater Festival, and more importantly, introducing us to these wonderful works that all of you are creating. This has been so wonderful. I can't wait for the festival. I can't wait to see your works and to meet you all in person. But most importantly, thank you so much today for your time.
Thank you.
So happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much.
My guests today have been several artists who are participating in the Rogue Theater Festival, which is happening June 3rd through the 9th at the Flea Theater. Tickets and more information are available at roguetheaterfestival.com. We were joined by artists involved with The Goblin Woman, He's Different, and Clocks Are Like Angels. We're going to have contact information as well as performance dates for all of these shows and artists listed in our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But if you are in the New York area, or you want to come visit the New York area, we got a great reason for you to come on out. Check out some downtown theater, which is amazing. Again, it's the Rogue Theater Festival happening June 3rd through the 9th at the Flea Theater. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.